La Jolla, California, UC San Diego Athletics presents TritonCast, the podcast for the UC San Diego Tritons. Here are your hosts, Jeff Toriel and Jenny Stevens.
Welcome to episode 27 of TritonCast, the official podcast for UC San Diego Athletics. Alongside Jeff Toriel, I'm Jenny Stevens. What's coming up in today's Triton Spotlight, Jeff?
Well, before we get to that, Happy New Year, Jenny.
Thank you. You too.
Coming up in this week's Triton Spotlight, we'll chat with former Triton catcher Kellen Lee. The All-American and Gold Glove winner reflected on his time with the Triton baseball team, which included an appearance in the finals of the national championship. Plus, Kellen shares about his work as a mental skills coach in the San Francisco Giants organization. Find out how his time teaching mental skills to the U.S. Army helped him prepare for his time with the Giants. Our conversation with Kellen Lee comes your way shortly in this week's Triton Spotlight.
But first, we go around campus. We're looking back on some of the top stories of 2020. Be sure to check out our top press releases, feature stories, and more on UCSDTritons.com. And while you're on the site, don't miss the previews of the men's and women's basketball teams' first Big West Conference games as they face Cal Poly on January 1st.
So glad basketball's back. Now it's on to this week's Triton Spotlight. Here's our conversation with former UC San Diego baseball catcher, Kellen Lee.
So tell us, Kellen, when did you first start playing baseball?
Oh, well, I started playing baseball when I was really young. In fact, when I was a kid, I pretty much played every sport under the sun. So I grew up in the San Diego area. I actually was born at Scripps La Jolla, right across the street from the baseball field at UCSD. So it goes full circle. But as a kid, I played soccer, basketball, football, baseball. And, you know, as I got older, I realized that baseball was probably more for me. So in high school, I played football and baseball, but really focused my effort mostly on baseball. And I saw football as an avenue to improve my game on the baseball field. So it was really always an interest for me and my family. And that's really my story in terms of my background in baseball. It's always been there. And as I got older, it really was the thing that I focus on the most.
What was it about baseball that was so interesting to you?
I don't know. I think as a young kid, it came pretty easy to me. But also, I love the fact of, you know, you have to, it's an opportunity to work on your ability dealing with failure. And as a kid, you don't really necessarily think about that. But, you know, I realized those are so many lessons that I took away from my time on the field that I was able to apply outside of sport and outside of baseball that I found a lot of value there. So as a kid, I realized that I got to practice over and over how to deal with failure. And obviously, that's a really valuable skill. So I like the team aspect, but also the dynamic of it being an individual sport within a team setting, which is really cool and unique to baseball. And that was a huge draw for me too.
That's awesome. Baseball is definitely a very unique sport in that aspect. You mentioned that you played at the high school level. Was there any question in your mind ever about whether you would play at the college level?
Absolutely, actually. So in high school, I was a decent player, and playing in college was always a goal. I didn't know how realistic of a goal it was. And as a junior, I got to play a little bit, but didn't play a lot. So going into my senior year in high school, I wasn't necessarily on anyone's huge recruiting radars. I wasn't like a big time recruit. But I did play pretty well my senior year. So what ended up happening, since it was a little bit late in the recruiting cycle, is I ended up going to Palomar Junior College prior to UCSD. And, you know, at the time, I was a pretty good student in high school, and a lot of my friends kind of gave me a hard time going the junior college route. But I look back now and it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because the 2 years I spent at Palomar College, I was able to get ahead academically. I really got better on the baseball field, and, you know, ultimately led to my career at UCSD. So there was definitely a question. It was really unclear, but I was able to secure a spot at the junior college level, and then obviously on to UCSD after that.
That's awesome that it worked out that way for you. What was it about UCSD that drew you to it?
Well, it was the first coaching staff in school that gave me some interest out of junior college. Again, like I said, I'm a local kid. I'm from Vista, North San Diego County. And it was really just a great fit. Like I said, I've always been a pretty high academic individual. I took pride in my academics, and obviously UCSD is notorious for that. So on top of it being a really great program at the time, you know, this was, I was in junior college in 2007 and 2008, and the program had just come off of a really great season. And I wanted to play for a good team, for a good school, and it made a lot of sense to stay, you know, semi close to home. And I really enjoyed my interactions with the coaching staff at the time. And it just really was a great fit. And I had no doubt in my mind, as soon as I took a visit and you got to meet some of the players, that it was UCSD was the right place for me.
That's awesome. How was that first season for you transitioning from Palomar to UC San Diego?
It was good. A lot of learning. It's interesting because the game itself doesn't necessarily change, but it's the obviously the skill level changes, the intricacies of the game changes. And it was a steep learning curve for me when I first arrived in the fall. It was somewhat of a wake up call in terms of how challenging the game can be at that level. But overall, the team did such an amazing job integrating new players into the system. And I know that's not common with other programs, but I will say my time at UCSD, my time transitioning into UCSD, my teammates and I, we really took pride in welcoming the younger players or the newer players, the transfers or the freshmen into the team, and really wanted to make them feel at home and, you know, be a Triton from day one. And I just can't speak highly enough about my teammates in that regard and the coaching staff facilitating that type of environment for every single Triton baseball player that came through during my time.
It's definitely a special dynamic with the UC San Diego baseball team. And of course, it's a culture of success there too. And the team had tons of success while you were there, placing first in the CCAA, making incredible postseason runs. What sticks out in your mind for some of the highlights on the field?
Oh, there's so many. As you said, I was fortunate enough to play there for 3 years as a I redshirted a year at Palomar College. So I came in as a redshirt sophomore. So I was able to play 3 years at UCSD, and all 3 years we won the league championship. And in 2009 and 2010, we punched a ticket to the Division II World Series. And it was just such a great time. And I'd say the highlight, if I had to choose one, it would probably be the 2010 season, where it really the whole thing, it's hard to choose one, but you know, to be able to compete for a national championship was also a really highlight and a low light for us. Obviously we came up short and were national runner up that year and lost in the national championship game, but just being a part of that great team, and you know, we had an overall record of 54 wins and 8 losses, and it was just such a great time, you know, with my brothers on the field. And you know, we obviously had a lot of success as a team, but you know, individually we had a lot of great success as well. And it was cool to see everyone's hard work come to fruition and see the benefits and the payout on the field from a wins loss perspective and just from a personal performance perspective. And then looking back now, like, you know, whenever we get together as team, you know, whether it's alumni weekend or, you know, just, you know, for weddings, for our buddies' weddings, it's really cool to reminisce on all those moments that we had together. And it just makes, you know, all, that entire season very memorable, but really just all 3 years that I was there, you know, all of my best friends now are from that team, from those teams. And it's just really cool to have that mutual connection from the time together we had on the team.
Such an incredible story. I love it. For the national championship, when you look back on those memories, what do you remember about the atmosphere of playing at such a high level?
It was cool. So at the time, the championship was held at in Cary, North Carolina, where Team USA baseball trains. And it was really cool. You know, in terms of like how many fans were there, it's much less and much on a smaller scale than, you know, you see in the Division I World Series in Omaha, Nebraska. But at the same time, for us, it was no less important. It was our time to compete at the national level, and you know, to see the level of competition that we were up against was really, really cool. And it was such a good challenge for us to take on. But like I said, we had, you know, multiple All-Americans on our team, and you know, we had a handful of Gold Glove recipients, National Gold Glove recipients on that squad. And It was just a really great test for us to see, you know, how we measured up against the best in the country. And we obviously went toe to toe with them and fell short both years. But, you know, overall, we felt like we competed at the highest level we could. And, you know, we wish the results would have gone differently, obviously. But overall, we're really, really pleased and proud of the product that we put together as a team.
You mentioned some of those individual awards that your teammates won. And of course, so did you. You got All-America honors and a gold glove. What did receiving those accolades mean to you?
It came as a shock, but I was so like honored and humbled when those announcements were made. I still to this day remember Coach O'Brien, Dan O'Brien at the time in a team meeting at the World Series sharing, you know, who had been named All-American and who was named a gold glove recipient. And, you know, the year that I won the gold glove for the catching position, I was extremely surprised and caught off guard. Like I did not anticipate it. It wasn't something that was on my radar. The All-American accolade, I was, you know, a little bit more aware of, because I had been, you know, all West region player. And typically those are, it's easy to kind of make those guesses as to who are going to be the All-American, but the gold glove is really I can't even put into words how surprised I was, but really I was probably most proud of that honor. For those listeners that aren't necessarily aware what that means, they give one gold glove to every position in the entire country. So one catcher from all of Division II, one pitcher, one shortstop, one second baseman, so on and so forth. And they chose me for the catching position. I was so honored. And it was just a testament to how much work we put in as a catching group. From our coaches to the other catchers on our team. And I truly believe that we had the best catching core in the country, you know, cause my teammates, Justin Robles and Nick LaFace and Michael Benton just pushed me to be the best I could. And, on a daily basis. And I know I couldn't have done what I was able to do without those guys and the team and our coaches. So it was such an honor, and I was so humbled and really, like I said, so surprised that I was given that honor. But again, it's one of my most cherished accomplishments from an individual standpoint was that gold glove for sure.
Well, those are very definitely well-deserved honors. So congratulations on those. When you look back on the team, what really sticks out to you about the team dynamic at the time?
I would say just our ability to compete on a daily basis, no matter what the circumstances were. So a lot of times, athletes talk about, you know, flipping a switch and having to compete on game day or a competition day, but we really took pride and saw the value and the benefit in competing every single day, regardless if it was a practice in the fall where we didn't have a game for 5 months. It didn't matter. We wanted to compete because we wanted to be as good as we possibly could. And knowing that competing with each other, competing with ourselves on a daily basis was the recipe for success, that, you know, we took a full commitment to that. And, you know, on a daily basis, we made each other better for that. So, and we weren't afraid to, be honest with each other. And if someone wasn't pulling their weight or not necessarily playing up to their performance level or their potential, we would tell them. And it was nothing personal. We just knew that that's what it took to be great as an individual and as a team. And we facilitated that type of culture and environment on our team. And we know, you know, we saw the results from that process. So it just, I can't stress enough for any listeners out there or, you know, current student athletes tuning into the podcast, just take in consideration, the best teams in the world. And again, we can get into some of the stuff I'm doing now at the professional level, but the best teams, the best athletes in the world are the ones that commit to competing on a daily basis, regardless of their circumstances. And I know I saw that as a player, but I also see that as a professional now as well.
Great advice. I love it. We're here with Kellen Lee on this episode of TritonCast. Kellen, you talked earlier about how academics are important to you. How was it for you balancing baseball with your classes at UC San Diego?
Well, anyone who has ever been a student at UCSD knows that academics are no joke at the La Jolla campus. And I would say that if I had to grade myself, so to speak, on my balance of academics and athletics at UCSD, I probably wouldn't give myself higher than a C+. I think I could have done a much better job Knowing what I know now and knowing how to prioritize energy and maximize the time in each day. But I was able to get through and obviously graduated from the school, but I definitely, looking back, I definitely could have done a better job. But I will say for those listening that, you know, student athletes or just other students at UCSD, you have such a great opportunity to really engage in, you know, high level academia and take advantage of it. And I know, you know, with the athletes is hard in terms of how much time you might have or not, might not have with training and school and classes and studying and whatnot. But I just can't stress enough, you know, maximizing all opportunities to connect with professors and, you know, go the extra mile to learn and acquire the information, not just to pass a test, but, you know, to really acquire meaningful information for your career and for your future. And I know I definitely could have done a better job of that, but I did, you know, come out the other end of UCSD with a great education, and I'm proud of what I was able to accomplish. But yeah, it was definitely a challenge. And, you know, obviously to be an elite athlete and now, you know, being at the Division I level, I can imagine that, you know, the stakes are much higher from an athletic standpoint, but I'm sure the academics are even harder than they now than they were when I was a student. But I just can't stress enough of maximizing your opportunities and prioritizing your energy effectively, you know, getting to sleep at a good time. And, but also like really taking the time to engage in your classes and your material so that, again, you're not just learning to pass a test. You're really learning for the long haul.
That's awesome. I love that advice. It's definitely good. Just, yeah, like you said, not to just prepare for the test, but to learn information for life. So you were a double major in communications and psychology. How did you decide on those majors?
My first major coming in as a junior college transfer, I at the time saw myself as an athlete student and not a student athlete. So I asked the coaches like, what major can I, you know, get away with, you know, just taking a few classes and passing? They're like, okay, just do the comm major. It's good. I will say anyone who thinks comm major is easy, they're very much mistaken. It's not an easy major by any means. So I chose comm because it was a good fit to what I wanted to do at the time. And what I wanted to do at the time is absolutely not what I wanted or what I'm currently doing. And I'll kind of touch upon that story as well. At the time I saw myself going into business or, you know, doing something along the lines of, you know, marketing or something like that. And then, as I said, I had 3 years to play at UCSD, and Katie McGann, who is still at UCSD, was my academic advisor at the time. She, you know, pulled me in and said, Kellen, you have to pick up a second major. Otherwise you can't be eligible to play your fifth year. And, you know, I share this story with her, and she told me she shares this story with other student athletes as well. But I had no idea what I wanted to do. I hadn't even considered looking at other majors. And so I did some research. I looked around at some other majors and I boiled it down to psychology and sociology. And I couldn't even tell you the exact reason why I chose psychology at the time. But I did. And it was probably the best decision I ever made in terms of my academic trajectory. As you know, we fast forward today and, you know, I'm living in the psychology world, and we'll get into my career in additional education here in a second. But, it was a great, great decision. So I was able to major in both communication and psychology. And I think the blend of those two majors have absolutely served me well in what I'm doing now. And I absolutely think it was a great decision to go with both majors, given my career path and where I end up now. And, but yeah, at first it was more of how can I, you know, pass some classes and play some baseball. And it's really evolved into lifelong skills, as I mentioned earlier, lifelong information that I've found valuable, you know, even today, you know, years later.
Was there a specific point for you where you really figured out that you love psychology and that's what you wanted to go into?
I think it was a blend between what I was learning in class and what I was learning on the field. Like I said, Coach O'Brien, Dan O'Brien, did a really, really phenomenal job of training or facilitating a training environment that tested our psychological willpower and our mental skills to a point where the psychological side of the baseball game actually intrigued me much more than psychology in general. And at the time, I was like, wow, like there's so much more to the mental game of baseball than I had ever considered previously. And that's really, coupled with my the exploring of the psychology major, plus my experience of applying some of the psychological skills to my athletic performance, really sparked the interest for, you know, my my graduate school career or graduate school endeavors and the career that I'm currently in. That's what really sparked it, was the combination of the class, but also like my experience with the psychological skills hands-on as an athlete myself.
Talk a little bit about your experience with your master's degree for the sports psychology program. And did you immediately love it? Was it what you expected it to be?
Yeah. So after UCSD, a little bit of background there, Coach O'Brien ended up getting a job at Santa Clara University, right, as I graduated. And I had explored the sports psychology field a little bit as an undergrad after I discovered it. In fact, I talked to Dr. Rhonda Hackshaw, who's still involved with athletics, I believe, in some capacity at UCSD, mm-hmm. and she provided some insight as to what sports psychology is. And, you know, I realized that, wow, like there's so much more, and I definitely want to explore that. So when Coach O'Brien got the job at Santa Clara University, I actually worked on staff for him for 2 years, and I started my master's program about the same time. And to answer your question, I absolutely fell in love with the sports psychology master's program at JFK University. You know, it was very much applied focus. So we were able to take what we were learning in the classroom in terms of psychological concepts, theories, skills, techniques, and apply them right away to athletes of all ages and experience levels. And so I got the experience of working on a college baseball staff, but also was able to knock out my master's program at the same time. And I was able to see some of these concepts in action, you know, just watching from a distance in my role as an operations assistant with the baseball team at Santa Clara. I was able to, you know, see how these concepts can be played out from the other side, you know, from a coaching lens as opposed to a playing lens. And at the same time, learning them as a graduate student as well.
I know earlier we talked a little bit about you balancing your playing at UC San Diego with your classes. And I mean, it sounds like that was a pretty similar experience for you. I mean, being at Santa Clara and also getting your master's, how was that balance for you?
It was challenging. However, I'd say that I did a much better job of really honing in on my academic career at that time. Because again, I was probably more focused on my academics than I was on my role with the baseball team. Because at the baseball team, the operations assistant or the assistant, the director of baseball ops was in charge of a lot of like the logistics behind the scenes stuff. So like during a practice, I would be up in the press box, you know, doing homework or like doing assignments that I needed to do. So I found a really good rhythm in terms of getting my master's graduate work done, probably more so than I did as a student athlete. Cause again, I know how much time it takes to dedicate to your sport, but you know, I was retired, so to speak, at the time. And, I had a lot more time on my hands to really focus on my academics. But so I definitely learned, through experience, you know, how to balance my life. But again, I was able to be successful in the master's program, but also, you know, learn so much about college athletics working at Santa Clara. I did a couple different odds and ends jobs at the university athletic department just to get my hands in a lot of different things and learn and how an athletic department operates. And it was a great experience. But really my primary focus was absolutely my sports psychology master's program at the time.
Well, before we dive into your career a little more, I want to stick with your degrees for a minute because I understand that you recently completed your PhD program.
I did, yes. I just completed my PhD in performance psychology, so very, very closely related to sports psychology, but essentially more generalized outside of sports. So working when we talked about examples of working with actors and you know, musicians and really business executives and really anyone who has you know, performance related tasks that they have to accomplish, we just really focus on the mental side of the psychological aspects of those performances. And and then, you know, where that really stemmed from, you know, I took a few years off after my master's program before I started the PhD, and I was really intrigued and I wanted to learn more. And I think the PhD really, for me, the main motivation behind engaging in that program was to really open up my possibilities down the road. I think, you know, after I'm, you know, done doing the mental skills, hands-on work that I'm doing now, I would imagine that, you know, perhaps being a professor at a university might be a career path for me. Or, you know, I do adjunct faculty instruction for sport and performance psychology programs. So I've gotten a taste of it, and I really enjoy mentoring the future of the field of sport and performance psychology. And, so I can see that as a possibility down the road, but for the time being, it was such a valuable experience going through the rigors of a PhD program. And, I'm still getting used to people calling me Dr. Lee. It's still a weird thing for to hear. But I know, like, you know, I'm really proud of what I was able to accomplish by finishing off that PhD.
Well, we're chatting with Dr. Kellen Lee on this episode of TritonCast. Kellen, what was the focus of your PhD research?
So my PhD research, again, my background is in sport, and I really wanted to focus specifically on sport. So what I did was for my dissertation, I formulated a study that assessed the psychological aspects of sport injury. So how to give you the short end of the long, very, very long, extensive dissertation study. I had a group of collegiate athletes with all different types of injuries, and I had them assess their level of confidence, and then I taught them how to use like a visualization imagery intervention. So essentially, imagining themselves competing in their sport. So I taught them how to do that. I gave them a program to follow. I assessed their level of confidence 3 weeks later, and the study's results indicated that the use of the visualization imagery technique actually enhanced confidence at a significant level. So the intent there is a lot of athletes who have, you know, a wide range of injuries may be limited in terms of how many physical reps they're able to get. But, you know, they may not be limited by the number of mental repetitions that they're able to get. Hmm. So a skill like visualization imagery can enhance their confidence, but also perhaps enhance their performance once they return to health and be able to compete again. So it was a really long process to go through that, but I really enjoyed exploring the psychological side of the sport injury rehabilitation process. And I learned a lot about, you know, from the sports medicine world, actually in general, the sports psychology and the sports medicine research and fields of study tend to be pretty separate. But I was able to find a unique blend of those two worlds and, you know, essentially bring them together a little bit and see, what aspects of the rehabilitation process can be trained from a psychological lens. And it was really interesting to dive into the research a little bit more about, all those topics, confidence and visualization imagery, but also like, the cognitive, emotional components of the rehabilitation process. Because as you can imagine, if there's any athletes listening in that have gone through a serious injury or even, you know, nagging day-to-day injuries, it absolutely can take a psychological toll on you as an athlete. So it's important to realize that, you know, though you might be limited physically, there's something you can absolutely do from a mental standpoint to ensure that you're more ready than you otherwise would be when it's time to go compete. Go back to training and being back, adopting that identity as a student athlete, once again. So it's just a lot of layers, a lot of components, and I can talk your ear off for a long time about it, but it was super interesting to really, get in there. And ultimately I was really pleased with the results of the study, and, I'm hoping fingers crossed that it gets published in a journal at some point. But yeah, I'm really proud of going through that process. And it was a rigorous, challenging, you know, lots of setbacks throughout the way, but I'm really glad that I went through with it.
Well, congratulations on finishing that. That is really fascinating stuff. I love it. I want to switch gears a little bit and chat about your career. How was it for you when you first started working as a mental performance coach?
Yeah. So, for the listeners out there, sports psychology, performance psychology, the usual career path for people who have that type of educational background is working in a mental skills or mental performance enhancement coach role, where you work with athletes, you work with teams, you work with coaches, again, really anyone who has a performance-based job, and you help them develop skills to enhance their performance from a mental standpoint. So mental performance coaching is essentially someone who helps train other people's minds to work for them as opposed to against them. Hmm. And that's the way I describe it to people, because oftentimes people say like, oh man, I got in my own head, or, oh, I really got nervous and I was overthinking things. And that's really, those are just some common issues, not all the issues that I might help someone with or concerns that people might have. But that's really the draw to this type of field. So my job is to essentially help athletes, take their game to the next level by training the mental side of their game. And, you know, as transitioning out of being a graduate student at JFK University into really the mental performance, mental skills coaching world, I started out just doing private consulting. So I was really fortunate enough to, you know, in my master's program, I had to do internships and work with athletes and teams. And my last internship was with a college softball team. And I was able to facilitate a relationship with that coach and that team, where I was able to work with them for 3 years, even after I graduated. Hmm. So I worked with that program for quite a bit of time. And I learned a lot and I got great experience. And from there, you know, from that team, from other, you know, references and coaches talking, I found some more teams, found some more coaches to work with, and, you know, at all levels, you know, high school to youth, to college, to high school, I mean, really all over the map. And my goal really was always to get into professional baseball, because one thing about the field of sports psychology is there's quite a few full-time mental skills coaches across the Major League Baseball, you know, organization. So all 30 organizations, and almost every organization has someone who does, you know, mental skills or mental performance coaching within the organization. And that was always a goal of mine going through graduate school. And obviously as a baseball player, like that was exactly where I wanted to be. And, you know, so again, I was doing some consulting work here and there, and I actually had a few interviews, you know, of a couple of years out of grad school with a couple of organizations, and I didn't get the job. And some of the feedback I was getting is I needed more full-time experience, providing these skills to athletes or performers. And really, the biggest piece of feedback I got was, hey, go work with the Army, go work with the military, or go to the IMG Academy in Florida, as they have, both of those entities have quite a few full-time, you know, mental skills professionals, providing services to those type of performers. And at the time I was like, you know, I don't see the connection between mental skills, sports psychology, and the Army. Like, I don't get it. Like, sure, the IMG Academy, there's a lot of sports. It's a high performing, you know, boarding school for high school athletes. And they, you know, that made a lot of sense. But the Army, was a little skeptical. I didn't see the connection. I didn't understand it. I had never served in the military myself. It didn't make sense. However, I swallowed my pride after a couple of years, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to give this U.S. Army, you know, the work with the Army a little bit of a chance. I again walked into it very skeptical of, you know, I didn't see the connection of what sports psychology could bring to the United States Army. Now, fast forward, I worked for them for 3 years. I could not recommend young professionals in the field of sports psychology more to work with the United States Army or really any military entity, because what it did was, it forced me to think about the traditional sports psychology, mental skills, mental performance concepts in a totally new light and with a totally new population. And it forced me to step out of my comfort zone and be able to articulate really challenging conceptual concepts to a brand new population. Like I said, I never was in the military. I didn't really have a lot of knowledge of the military going into the job. But what it did for me is it made me a better instructor. It made me, you know, it strengthened my depth of knowledge and my understanding of the concepts. And, you know, there was a couple times where I found myself the only instructor in front of 500 soldiers in a big lecture hall. And if you would have told me that 10 years ago that I would have been teaching sports psychology techniques to 500 soldiers in a lecture hall, I'd say you're crazy. But I can't say enough about how cool that experience was. I learned so much. That's such an unbelievable population to get to know and understand and interact with. And I'm so humbled to be able to provide at least some type of value to those folks, you know, putting their life on the line and, you know, in such a risky and, you know, high risk in occupation. And, you know, here I am as a civilian with a, you know, a sports psychology master's degree teaching them, you know, teaching these, you know, veterans who have been in the Army and, you know, deployed multiple times skills that can make them just do their job a little bit better. It was such a cool experience. And, you know, fast forward to now. So, you know, for the listeners, I'm now a mental skills coach for the San Francisco Giants. And I will say that my time working with the Army absolutely 100% prepared me so well to work with professional baseball players. And, you know, yes, I have a baseball background. Yes, I understand the game at such a high level. But what I needed as a professional was to be able to articulate the sports psychology mental skills concepts at a high level. And that's what working with the Army allowed me to do. It forced me to do it because I was working with a great team up at Camp Parks, California. So in Dublin, California, there's a small Army base that I was working at. And my team there at Camp Parks did such a good job of, you know, helping me get better, you know, giving me feedback, being honest when I wasn't very effective and, you know, praising the times when I was effective. So I knew what to do to sustain success in the future. And I just, you know, I know I wouldn't be where I'm at today without that group of people and without the Army and the experience that I got with that program. So, yeah, I was kind of all over the place with that answer, but it really defines, you know, me as a mental skills coach, mental performance coach. And, you know, I know that, you know, working with the Army was so valuable and I just appreciate and I'm so grateful that I was able to, cause I learned so much about what they do and, you know, just being able to provide them just a little bit more, just a little bit of value. Like it was so gratifying and I found a lot of joy in that job with, you know, doing mental skills. And we taught resilience. We taught mental performance enhancement skills to, an amazing population. It was so awesome.
Wow. That is such an interesting path. Why do you think it is that sports psychology translated over to the military so well?
I think that, the biggest, likeness or the biggest, similarity between athletes and soldiers is that for the most part, they all want to be successful and they all want to get better. And with those two goals in mind, they'll take anything that allows them to get better and perform well. And, you know, sometimes I was met with, all right, guy, like, how are you going to help me? You're not in uniform. Like, what do you have to bring to me? And that's fine. That was great experience too, because guess what? Athletes do the same thing sometimes. They're like, why do I need to do this? I haven't done it for years. Like, what's the point of doing mental skills training? So I had that experience, but I'll say that the biggest trend, the cool thing, and I will share this because I think it's really unique and people tend to be really interested in this, is that soldiers are fascinated by what the elite athletes do from a mental standpoint and vice versa. Athletes, elite level athletes are fascinated by what US Army or, you know, other military entities do from a mental standpoint. And I'm kind of in the middle and I chuckle a little bit because I tell them all the same thing. I'm like, you guys do the same thing. Your performances are just so different, because you talk to a baseball player, they'll go, I can't even imagine jumping out of an airplane, you know, or a helicopter. But someone in the military who jumps out of an airplane or a helicopter all the time, they would say, I can't even imagine trying to hit a baseball in front of 40,000 people. And so there's like a mutual respect in terms of the demands of the tasks that they're faced with. But what they don't know is that the mental skills that they put into place to execute those tasks are identical. You know, to hit a baseball, you have to have good ability. You have to have the ability to control your focus and control your breathing, control your heart rate, and be in a state where you can, you know, execute your task. The same thing can be said when you're firing a rifle at the range, you know, trying to hit a target downrange. You have to control your heart rate. You have to control your breathing. You have to control your focus. All the skills are the same. The performances are just very different. And that's what's so cool about the transformation over is, if I'm delivering a presentation to baseball players with the Giants, I use stories from the Army. And back when I was working with the Army, I would use stories from when I was working with athletes, and they worked both ways. But just helping them bridge that gap and realize that what they're doing is identical to each other. And that's why the use of sport and performance psychology techniques are transferable across almost all contexts, regardless of what your profession is. You know, I would say that regardless of what you do, being able to control your focus and really zone, like really bring your attention to the present moment, is a transferable and universal skill, regardless of what you do. And helping them realize that all of those skills and strategies I've mentioned or alluded to are absolutely within your control and learnable. Like, you can learn those things. They're not something you're born with. And those are the type of messages that I share with the athletes and the military personnel that I've gotten to work with, is you can learn these things and they help you become a better person, a better performer. And ultimately, you're going to have much more sustained, consistent success if you commit to a consistent mental game training, and you give yourself that discipline to commit to what you need to do to be successful on a consistent basis.
So interesting. Because of those similarities you were just talking about between the military and baseball, was it an easy transition for you then when you got your position with the San Francisco Giants organization?
Yeah, you know, I'd say that from a job perspective, you know, obviously the knowledge of baseball really helped. But I think from an instructor standpoint, from a coach standpoint of coaching the skills in the moment, I absolutely think that it set me up for success. And again, like I said, I know I wouldn't be where I'm at today without my experience working with the Army. And, you know, little things like this, that I like to share with people is, you know, I think it was about 2 months on the job with the Army, and I found myself very intimidated by teaching people that were in their, you know, military in their Army uniform. As a civilian, I was very uncomfortable, and I was like, wow, like, are they even listening to me? Like, am I giving them anything of value? And I still remember to this day, one of the soldiers shared, you know, I asked a question. I think we were talking about, you know, emotional regulation and being able to identify the emotions that are productive versus counterproductive in a specific performance. And one of the soldiers shared the experience of, wow, like, I can see this really helpful in my relationship with my kid and my spouse. And me as the instructor, I was struck, and hopefully I kept my poker face through this whole conversation. But in my head, I was thinking like, wow, for the first time ever, I'm realizing that these are just people who wear different clothes and uniforms to work. That's it. And I take that same approach when I'm in front of, you know, our Giants front office folks, our top prospects, our major league players. They're just people who wear different uniforms and clothes to work. And when I have that type of perspective, it makes me feel really comfortable, because that's who they are. You know, you see, you know, a lot of people think these, you know, professional athletes are something that they're not, but really they're just people. They have fears. They have family members. They have, you know, they have quirks about them that you would never know just from the media or seeing them in public. And once you realize that they're people who just wear different clothes to work, it gives you that sense of comfort that you can make a human connection with them. And then the quality of the work absolutely skyrockets. And I learned that through working with the Army and stepping outside my comfort zone and working with a group that I had no idea about. And I had to learn about them, and I had to ask questions, and I had to be curious, and I had to approach every single day with a certain passion and interest. And like I said, curiosity, I think is really key in this work. And I take the same approach with baseball players. And, you know, one thing I do incorporate into my work is a lot of question asking. And specifically, regardless if I think I know the answer or not to the question, I still ask it, because what it does is it gives me an insight into that person of how they see the world, their perspective, and perhaps they give me something I didn't even expect. And then I learn something new. So, you know, being able to be really curious and inquisitive, regardless of how much information you have about the context, is something else I learned with the Army as well. And, you know, even like I said, even with my baseball background, you know, I try to go about my business every day as if I know nothing about what they're doing, so that I have a fresh perspective every single day. And I've learned so much from taking that approach, and has really helped me in just overall effectiveness of doing the mental skills work with the Giants.
So when you're working with these players and front office people at such a high level, what are some of the things that you focus on in regards to the mental skills?
A couple things. So some of the foundational concepts that we share with the Giants are something as simple as committing to a consistent routine. And what a consistent routine allows you to do is it allows you to approach everything you're doing with as much control as you can, because typically in a competitive, you know, high stakes environment, there are so many factors that you can't control. You know, if you're a batter and you're facing a pitcher who, you know, has a really great slider, you can't control how many times he throws his great slider. But what you can control is your consistent routine between pitches, ensuring that you're taking the time and dedicating the necessary energy and effort and attention to establishing yourself prior to getting back in the box and seeing the next pitch. So regardless of what's happening around you, you can commit to something consistently over time to ensure that you're mentally approaching every moment the same or as much as possible. But also, I think the biggest thing when it comes to pro sports, and I think college sports can relate to this as well, is that the statistics, like your results, are what anyone ever talks about. You turn on SportsCenter and you hear about, you know, who had, you know, 20 points and 4 rebounds on the basketball court. And you hear about, you know, who rushed for 120 yards and, you know, 2 touchdowns on the football field. And then baseball, you hear about who went 3 for 4 with 2 home runs and, you know, 4 RBIs. And don't get me wrong, like those results, they're important. Like, especially in pro sports, if you don't perform, you're not going to stick around. You're going to lose your job. You're going to get cut. You're going to get traded. Like, the business side of the game is probably, you could fill a whole nother podcast on the business side of professional sports. But ultimately, the one thing we want to bring our guys back to is that we need them to have the discipline to focus on the process of improvement, even though those results are what everyone talks about. And if we can truly get them to commit to sticking to their process and really focus on the process of improving and getting better, regardless of whether they've been in the major leagues for 12 years or they're a rookie coming out of the draft in high school or college, it doesn't matter. The same principle applies, where if I go about my business with the intent of improving versus performing, I've succeeded that day. Because again, when it comes to performing, there's so many factors that are outside my control, but what I can do something about is focus on the process of improvement. So perhaps that's just engaging in some mental training skills, or, you know, the physical training that you need to do that day. That's fine. Like, that's what you do. But it's that discipline to really focus on the process of improvement when those results are what anyone ever talks about. That's the key right there.
So I know you mentioned earlier that sometimes it is hard to get people to buy into the importance of the mental aspect of sports. Have you encountered that very frequently? And when you do you try to convince the person it's worthwhile, or is it really just a personal thing? They're either going to reject it or accept it.
That's a great question. I'm so glad you brought it up. You know, in the sports psychology world, we call it the mental training paradox. And what I mean by that is almost, and again, this is something I've asked almost every athlete or team that I've ever worked with. I asked them the very first, like, to build this buy-in, what you're talking about of like what mental skills are and like if they're valuable or not. I ask them, how much of your game is mental? Like, give me a percentage. And I will say, from the Giants perspective, this was one of the first presentations I ever gave with the Giants. I asked them that question. And almost every single player and coach were north of 60%. In fact, I'd say probably an average was probably 65 to 70%. People were saying the game of baseball is 65 to 70% mental. Okay, great. Cool. Awesome. So then I follow up with the question, well, how much time do you dedicate training the mental side of the game? And almost every single athlete says 0 to 10% of the time. So there's this paradox where the majority of athletes, especially baseball players, acknowledge that the mental game exists. Like, the mental side of their game is important. In fact, like I said, average is probably 65 to 70% of the game. They said it, not me. They said the game is about 65 to 70% mental. Yet they also acknowledge that they only spend 0 to 10% of the time working on it. So to answer your question, I don't necessarily have to convince them if I ask the right questions, because if I stand up there and like try to, you know, push back on them and go, no, the mental game is important. You need to listen to this. This is going to make you, you know, take you to the next level. They're going to look at me like I'm crazy and probably tune me out. But if I ask them, hey, how much of your game is mental? And they tell me, let's just say 60%. Okay, cool. Well, how much of the time that you spend training do you train the mental game? And they go, well, actually like zero. Like I actually don't work on it at all. I'm like, okay, so this is how I follow up. So, okay, cool. You're telling me that 60% of your game is mental, yet you spent 0% of the time training it. So are you only operating at 40% of your potential? And they look at me, they're like, okay, you got me. Like you can't really argue with the numbers. So my experience is that regardless of what they say, they create their own buy-in, and I don't have to defend the skills. Again, if I spent time defending skills and defending the research that I know exists, I'll probably create space between myself and whoever's standing in front of me, whether it's a group or an individual. But if I stimulate that conversation through curiosity and questions and being inquisitive, they're going to build in their own buy-in, and I won't have to do much other than ask the right questions. And then by the end of the conversation, they'll go like, okay, cool. Like, I think the game's 60% mental, and I want you to help me train as much as I can that 60%. I'm like, okay, let's get to work. So I don't necessarily ever have to convince or persuade or, you know, provide evidence in a court trial of why the mental game is important. They do it for me. I just have to ask the right questions.
That's so interesting. And I know you mentioned earlier that you've really worked with players of all levels, like college softball. And of course, now you're with the Giants. What are some of the biggest differences between what you're focusing on with lower levels versus higher levels?
That's a really good question. I would say the skills themselves don't necessarily change too much. I would say that a huge factor that plays into, you know, my overall approach with an athlete or a team is their level of understanding. So with an older, like adult population, I might go into a little bit more of the research versus working with a young, you know, youth team, let's just say 10 to 12 year olds. I might go more, you know, focus on like the surface level, just like the skills themselves. But I will say that the activities, so I'm big into experiential learning. So giving them activities and really help them see and feel and touch the concepts, because a lot of these concepts are gray area. They're subjective. They're not necessarily something you can touch. They're intangibles, if you will, that doing some experiential hands-on learning is going to help them, you know, really conceptualize these ideas much better. And I will say that regardless whether I'm working with, you know, adult, you know, professional baseball players versus, you know, a 10-year-old soccer team, I'm probably going to use the same set of activities and experiential learning modalities, because ultimately I want them to experience the concept. And if an activity really works, it works. For example, there's one activity I do that I have people draw stick figures. And guess what? I have my professional baseball players drawing stick figures. And I do the same thing with little kids. And the point that gets across is that they're learning something, and I don't really care what it looks like. So I will say that like the presentation of the material might look slightly different, but experientially, the activities, you know, how I talk about them, wouldn't change too much. I will say the sport determines a lot of those choices as well. You know, working with a soccer player is, you know, might look a lot different than a basketball player or versus a baseball player or, you know, a water polo player or, you know, a track and field athlete. Like there's just a lot of factors that go into it. And then also like identifying what they need in the moment, you know, perhaps, there's a track and field athlete that's feeling a lot of, you know, pre-race anxiety. So maybe I'll give them some breathing techniques. Or if I'm working with a water polo player who, you know, finds herself, you know, overthinking, you know, in the pool, perhaps I give them more of like a mindfulness-based technique where, you know, they allow their thoughts to come and go and not really latching onto their thoughts and see if that really helps them. So it just really depends on, you know, the nature of one of their concerns or what they want to sustain in terms of getting or, you know, being good and, you know, keeping their success level high, but it just really depends. But the skills definitely might take on a different shape, but ultimately at their core, they don't really change too much.
Well, we're just about out of time for today. So Last question for you, Kellen, when you're not busy with baseball or psychology or whatever it may be, what do you like to do in your free time?
Wow. There hasn't been a lot of free time with the PhD and everything and work, but I love spending time with my wife and my two kids. My son is 3, Colton, and my daughter is 1 month old, Dawson. So I hang out with them, my wife, Jacqueline. So we do a lot of family things here. And I live in San Jose, California. I try to go down to San Diego as much as I can because my family's still down there, and, you know, visit the Triton baseball field, as that is home away from home. But, you know, we do as many things as we can as a family. It really helps us stay connected and charged up from an emotional standpoint. But yeah, I know I love to stay in shape and work out. And, you know, I think exercise, there's obviously a lot of benefits there, but, you know, that's kind of what I do. I like to, you know, listen to podcasts. So I'm definitely going to listen back to this podcast to see, you know, where I can improve, in terms of how I'm articulating concepts. And I look forward to listening back, but I just love to the continuous learning, regardless of what that is. I'm committing to trying to learn something new every day. And whether that's through podcasts or reading or videos or articles, someone may not think that's fun. For me, that's really fun to continue to learn and get better in my craft.
That's awesome. And we always love seeing you back at Triton baseball field whenever you're back.
Yeah, I know. I love being there.
Thank you so much for joining us today on this episode of Triton Cast, Kellen.
Oh, Jenny, thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be on, and any time I can stay connected with the Triton Athletic Department is something I'll definitely do. And I just got to say, go Tritons. And I'm so excited to see the trajectory of the athletic department go into Division I, and, you know, excited to see what the future holds.
Jenny, that was a fantastic conversation you had with Kellen. Definitely, as a listener, left me wanting more. For me, the concept of how much of a mental game baseball specifically is, but how little players traditionally have worked on the mental side of things, I think that was really eye-opening to hear him explain that and how the Giants have really embraced that to their organization's benefit.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, it really emphasized the importance of mental skills. And I think one of the things that struck me the most is how, I mean, it's not even just a baseball thing. It's not even just a sports thing, but it translates into so many different areas of performance, even what you might not think about as performance, like he was talking about training with the U.S. Army. So that was just so interesting to me. And it was great that he was able to do that, even though it was something that he was a little uncomfortable with at the start.
Right. He totally grew into that. And his career arc is certainly very interesting. Well, continued success to Kellen. And thanks so much for joining us. And for you, the listener, stay tuned in 2021. We'll have more great interviews on TritonCast. As you know by now, new episodes premiere each Wednesday.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's show. Whether you found us on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, so many platforms, we're so happy that you joined us. And if you like what you heard, do us a favor and subscribe, rate us, and give us a brief review. It would mean a lot to us. For more on TritonCast, give us a follow on Twitter at TritonCast. And if you've got suggestions for a future guest, feel free to tweet Jeff and I or email us at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. See you back here next week. Happy New Year.
You've been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter at TritonCast.